This episode is brought to you by Progressive. Most of you aren't just listening right now. You're driving, cleaning, and even exercising. But what if you could be saving money by switching to Progressive? Drivers who save by switching save nearly $750 on average. And auto customers qualify for an average of 7 discounts. Multitask right now. Quote today at Progressive.com. Progressive Casualty Insurance Company and Affiliates. National average 12-month savings of $744 by new customers surveyed who saved with Progressive between June 2022 and May 2023. Potential savings will vary. Discounts not available in all states and situations.
I'm Rhett.
And I'm Link.
And we're the hosts of the podcast Ear Biscuits. We're just two lifelong friends who've been talking about life for a long time.
From being dads to businessmen to all the random things we experience, nothing is off limits.
And now we're talking to you. We're answering your questions, giving advice that you may or may not want to take, and listening to your hilarious stories.
So leave us a voicemail to be part of the show at
1-888-EARPOD1 on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Joining us now via the Rude Guest Hotline is our friend Mr. Barry Sverluga. Barry, are you currently still in Augusta?
I am in my home in Washington, the District of Columbia.
Okay, great. When did you leave this morning?
Left this morning, easy flight from Columbia, back by noon.
Okay, great.
How was the time down there?
Yeah.
Whoa, man. I mean, it's a lot to get your arms around. Like, those weeks are always great. JP, you know they're fun. Like, any day at that place in any situation is fun. I know there's recency bias, but that feels like an all-timer yesterday for a bunch of reasons, the way it played out, but certainly the character that brought it home. This is one of these where I kind of process, okay, what are the top five things I've seen live and what would rank ahead of that? And I'm working through that project right now.
It's funny. We actually discussed this. I don't know. Shane Bacon, you probably know him, had a really good tweet about what ranks similarly to that in the last 20 years. And it was like the Red Sox finally getting past the Yankees, stuff like that. It was, Tiger, honestly, in 2019 at Augusta, kind of where do you think that ranks as you work your way through it? Maybe you don't know exactly yet, but where does it seem like?
Yeah, it's up there, and it's because it's very much like the Red Sox in 04 or the Cubs in 2016, and that's in my conversation, that 16 Cubs, Game 7, breaking the curse. I covered that because of what Rory had been through. I put in the first paragraph of my column this morning a quote that Jack Nicklaus said in 2015, and that it was basically like, don't worry about Rory. He's going to win plenty of Masters. He's going to win lots more majors. Just kind of leave him alone. And a decade later, like, that was not true. And that was not true because he lost his game, which happens to people. Like, people have hot streaks and they win majors, and then it's like, oh, I can't figure this out again, and they never capture it again, and that's golf in part. But this guy has spent the bulk of that 10 years being the best player on the planet, with some blips and a little bit of inconsistencies. But, you know, he's won the Players. He's won the FedEx Cup. He's won everything else there is to win except a major, and this was the one that he needed to win the Grand Slam. And so when he walks into his press conference yesterday, he opens it by saying, hey, I'm going to start this thing with a question for you guys. What are we going to talk about next year? Because it was always, can you get it done? How have you prepared? What's your mentality around here? So all of those layers, JP, I mean, I can list the things it's contending with, but it is a strong contender for top five things I've seen and covered live.
It's got to be. And to think you and I were sitting in Long Island, whatever, 10 days ago, watching Alex Ovechkin break Wayne Gretzky's goal record, right? And then to have this right after that is just so significant. And the thing that I stand by, the quote that has stuck with me, I read this Bamberger book a couple weeks ago called Men in Green, and it's about, like, famous people in golf, some that you've heard of, some that you've never heard of. And I can't remember who said it first. I want to say maybe it was Hogan or Palmer, but a quote that became something that Tiger Woods started to use a lot was basically, life isn't about what you achieve, it's about what you overcome. And I feel like that's the only way Rory was going to win that, in that just absurd, chaotic way.
Yeah, and that speaks to his whole career. I mean, it's very easy to kind of make a single day a microcosm of something else, but I don't think it's a stretch in this instance. I mean, you know, he makes the boneheaded play into 13 in the water after making probably two pretty smart shots. Like, that's a disappointment he had to overcome, and then rip the 7-iron into the 15th green. That's just as good a golf shot as you're ever going to see. Apply that to what he's overcome by winning the Masters. Like, all the putts he missed at St. Andrews on a day that he struck the ball well and lost to Cam Young, who roared from behind with a 64. Like, the two tiny missed putts late on the back nine of the U.S. Open last year that allowed Bryson DeChambeau to pass him with a great up and down on the 18th. Like, the mistakes he made yesterday and the opportunities that had slipped away in the past are so, so analogous. And, you know, in the end, like, he stepped up on 18 and hit as good a wedge in there as you can hit. You can't tell me if he had hit that to 10 feet that he was going to make it. He had to hit it to two because he was such a bundle of nerves.
Right.
But that's also, like, part of what makes him such an intriguing character is, like, he admits it. He's human. He's vulnerable. Like, that's cost him in the past. And it was just such a relief for him. And I think for golf, because the storyline changed yesterday that he did hit it to 2 feet and he was able to trickle it in. And the Grand Slam, you know, it's a short list, man. It's now a 6-man club. The names that are not on it, Arnold Palmer and Tom Watson and Lee Trevino, are just as staggering as the ones that are on it. And Rory is now on it, which is amazing.
So I had to look that up last night. B-Mitch, do you know? So Palmer is not in the Grand Slam club. Do you know which major he didn't win?
Arnold Palmer?
Yeah. I found this surprising.
Masters?
The PGA.
PGA.
I could be incorrect, but that kind of seems like the easiest one. I don't know if you agree with that, Barry.
It's the one with the, you know, the setup doesn't distinguish itself. It has a bunch of club pros in it, in the field. So, you know, they like to say by world rankings, it's the strongest field of the year. But it's not like the U.S. Open where you're like, you know, that somewhere between, you know, 2 under and 1 over is probably going to win. Like, the PGA feels more, of all the majors, it feels most like a regular tour stop. But you're right. I mean, that, you know, that fact that he never has to answer that again. And the other thing I think is his relationship with Augusta National could really change now. He's always played the course well and always made some pretty significant mistakes, but now he knows he's coming back there for the rest of his life. He knows that on Tuesday night of Masters week, he's not looking for a reservation or having his chef cook something back at the rental house.
Right.
Like, he's going to the champions dinner, and that's got to be so freeing. Because that's the one of all the golf majors, the one that changes your life the most is the Masters, because you're in the field for as long as you want to be in the field. And you have that dinner date on Tuesday of Masters week that very, very few people have. It would be a shame if Danny Willett had that date for the rest of his life and Rory McIlroy didn't.
But, like, he was the first guy with that many doubles to win the tournament there. He did some great things. He did some awful things along the way, which means his great things had to be even better to be able to still hoist the trophy and win it.
Yeah, and I think you're right, Brian. Like, the way he would get better there would be, like, he could have won that tournament by 8 shots without even, like, without a stretch. Like,
right.
Even if you allow him the double at, where did he double on? He doubled 15 on Thursday.
On Thursday, 15
even and 17. If you allow him that one, the sloppy one was the double at 17. Like, that was just like, my brain has left. I'm just not concentrating on each shot. Like, make that a bogey. Like, eliminate the double on 13, which there's no way that wedge should go in the water. The double at one, he admitted, was all nerves. Like, he just was a wreck. And it almost, like, calmed him because he was like, okay, I've made that mistake. I can get it out. You've tapped into something here, Brian, because he's so good that he can overcome mistakes that basically nobody else could overcome because mm-hmm. he's got that shot at 15. He's got that shot at 17 where it's just such a tough hole to bogey. I mean, I'm sorry, to birdie, and he birdied it when he needed it. It's all in there. And I don't even think in winning this one, like, he really put it all together because he had such egregious mistakes and because he was so wobbly. Maybe winning this one frees up his mind, reminds him how good he is, reminds him that he can summon those shots in those key situations. And I mean, the next major is the PGA at Quail Hollow,
which he loves.
He won his first PGA Tour title there. He loves that place. It sets up for him perfectly. The British Open is in Portrush in Northern Ireland, like down the road from his hometown. Now, he missed the cut there the last time, but you know, I'm not sitting here telling you that Rory McIlroy is going to win another major this year or five more majors the rest of his career, but it'll be really interesting to see what was unlocked emotionally and mentally by getting it done finally at Augusta.
Because it's
possible that it's done.
The shots, Mary, over the trees. Not many people, even pro level, can get that ball up that quick.
Stone.
Because his swing speed and ball speed is ridiculous.
It's so, I was there on Saturday at 7. And you know, JP, you just kind of have to luck into finding yourself at the right place at the right time at Augusta. And if you hang in with a group, you're going to. It's going to happen. And so on Saturday, he hits it right of 7. And you know, people are gathered around the ball and they give him a lane and the marshals are there and it's not, there's nothing, there's no conflict. It's just like, we're going to watch what happens. And I'm looking low, like, okay, can he snake it around this tree? Like, can he hit a cut around that tree low, bounce it up and maybe split the two bunkers? Or if he ends up in the bunker, like, no big deal. He can make it up and down, or the worst he's going to do is make bogey. Not that big of a deal. All of a sudden he's like looking up. And I'm going, what are you talking about? Up. And people like start pointing, like, you know, because you can't really, you can't scream it, but you're like looking at your friends, like, he's looking up and he's talking to Harry, his caddy. And damned if he doesn't pull, I don't even know what he pulled. I think it was an 8-iron, opens up the face. And you talk about swing speed or clubhead speed, Brian, like, it's a violent motion at that time. Like, he is coming down on that ball. And the thing looked like it shot up in an elevator shaft. And then it carried left of the green. Like, it didn't seem, not just by like a human, but just by physics. Like, I didn't think a ball could get up that fast and then carry that far. And he made an amazing, amazing par. He did it on the other side of the fairway, the seventh fairway on Sunday. But just physically, he's an extraordinary, extraordinary golfer.
Mm-hmm. Which is crazy because I don't know that people realize when you see him in person. I mean,
he's tiny.
He's 5'8",
5'9". Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's crazy. Dude, going back to Royal Portrush, so that's where the British is this year. And I remember when it was there a couple of years back where he didn't make the cut. Remember, he started poorly and then say he shot a 75 and then a 66 and missed it by one. Imagine the pressure he felt then of with this, hadn't won a major streak going, and then it's basically in his hometown. How it'll be so different this time. Like,
so different.
Getting that major streak off the hook has changed everything for him, I would think.
So different. And also, I, you know, Shane Lowry won there, an Irishman, won the 2019 Open there. And, they, you know, you saw the hug between those two afterwards. Like,
yep.
That's really freeing for him. Like, oh, we can get this done and it really means something. But it goes back to what I'm wondering about, you know, going forward for him. Is it like, is it truly freeing in a way that those things, those pressure moments that clearly affected him in the past don't affect him in the same way anymore? It's really, really hard to say. Until, you know, we see him at Quail Hollow with a one-shot lead on the 71st hole and see how he reacts. I mean, he's also, like, if you ever watch him play and watch him play in person, he is such a body language guy. Like when he's playing well, that strut is going. He bounces. Is a peacock, and you know exactly. And then if it turns, like he's like Eeyore, like his shoulders slump, and the gait is just different. I think like if he can get to that point where the strut is his default mode, like that's just what comes out of him, then, you know, he's only 35. These guys bomb the ball for another decade or more. It's all still on the table for him.
Yeah, totally. Talking with our friend Barry Sferluga from the Washington Post. Read all his work at thewashingtonpost.com. Give him a follow if you'd like, at Barry Sferluga, Sverluga. Usually when we got you, we talk a bunch of different stuff. But I know you've been in Augusta for the last week, and it'd be crazy not to just talk to you about Augusta. This is perhaps a little inside baseball. I've done a little bit of work at golf tournaments, but primarily just like TV packages, which is wildly different than what you do. Can you just take us inside your day yesterday, like the physical logistics of when you're there, when you're writing? There's no electronics allowed on that course. So I imagine you have an actual notebook. You're writing everything down with an actual pen. Just let us hear how it goes.
Yeah. Yeah. You're totally right. So yesterday was a great day because I ended up with you'll appreciate this, like with a pass for a buddy of mine who had never been on the grounds before. And we got word of this about noon on Saturday. And so he hopped in the car and drove down from DC. And so I got there way earlier than I normally would, just to do the tour. And, you know, JP, like I feel like we could have started and walked that course, and we walked down 10. It's exactly the walk we did last week when I was there with you and your buddy, like walk down 10, see 11. And then like 12 just like opens up, and you're like, you know, if you're a golf fan, like, that is a holy bleep moment. Like, so spent the morning doing that, went inside, got ready. And then I go out with the leaders, or pick a group. And the group yesterday was obvious, in Bryson and Rory as the final group, 'cause they were up on anybody else by two shots. So, but I also know I'm not going to see everything I want to see from that vantage point. It's the only tournament where reporters don't have inside the ropes access, which is not a complaint. That's a reality. The inside the ropes stuff is so awesome at a US Open or a PGA or a British Open. But I go to this one knowing it won't be inside the ropes. And so I've got spots, particularly on the front nine, where I know, okay, I can get a good vantage point from here, or if the ball, you know, if the ball's on the right side of the fairway, I'll be here. I can watch the third hole, you know, just I've been there enough that I know where I can see. But the reality is I can't stay out there for 18. Print newspapers might be dead, but we still publish one. And that means you have a deadline. And the other thing is, so I have to get in and start kind of organizing thoughts to write while the back nine is going on. But if it gets as crazy as it did yesterday, and that will always be remembered as Rory over Justin Rose in the playoff, but it was Rory and Justin Rose and Ludvig Åberg tied at 10 under at one point. Like, it was Bryson unraveling. There was stuff going on all over the course. P. Reed, like, bouncing one in. Like, you cannot, not only can you not see it if you're out there, you don't know what is happening. Like, you're relying on word of mouth that might be kind of sketchy. Like, oh, I was just over at 15 and I saw Patrick do this or whatever. So the sad reality is, like, the back nine on Sunday, I've got to be at my chair with my TV in the press center, you know, monitoring it really closely and taking notes, but not seeing those golf shots live.
But, dude, it's also – golf is best on television. It's just too hard to see multiple –
see everything at one
dude,
time.
Like, that's why I mean, this is not just Augusta. Like, this LIV tournament coming up, if you're into that, or the senior PGA is going to be at Congressional in May. If you're into those things, go to a practice round and walk around and see the course. And, you know, if there's one golfer you really want to see, go to the range and watch them or whatever, and then watch the actual tournament at home. It's so much better. Or now they VIP areas and stuff. But,
well, I would say I would just have a caveat. Like, I think a Thursday or Friday can be fun too, because the field's spread out. Like, you know, there's a chance that, like, you know, this week Scotty was in the morning and Rory was in the afternoon. Like, you could see a little of, you're not as invested in the whole round. Like, it's really hard to watch a whole round of one player at a big, big golf tournament with a lot of fans. So there are plenty of people who leave the grounds of Augusta National on Saturday and Sunday and go back to their rental houses or their own homes and watch it on TV. And my buddy who was there for the first time yesterday, like, he had an awesome time from about 8 a.m. until 4 p.m. when they made the turn, the leaders made the turn. And then he watched the rest of it on TV because he got the full walks on it. But, you know, you want to remember those shots. You want to mm-hmm. feel them in the moment. And a lot of it, you know, people shouldn't, anybody who gets a chance to go to Augusta who wants to go should do it because it's just an awesome experience. But know that back nine on Sunday, unless you're like, I really want to just park myself at 16 or whatever, like right. you're not going to see the whole tournament.
Yeah. And if you get passes for a Sunday at Augusta, go. It's still whatever you can, just go. So I'm not advocating not going. Barry, I don't know who actually like sets the headlines, and is it agate? What's the term for like the actual
agate? Yeah.
Agate, like the actual Washington Post newspaper sports section looked terrific. And I don't know if there's a widespread panic fan setting that thing up, but they did good with Ain't Life Grand.
Ain't Life Grand worked great. And the picture, I'm looking at it right now because I still get the print edition. And the picture, of course, is of Rory's reaction, but it's early in the reaction and he's leaning back and his hands have just gone to his head. But his putter has been jettisoned, and
yeah, it's
just
so
like
cool.
Hanging in midair. It's really, really cool. And also, guys, I would say, like, you see people celebrate championships and wins of all kinds. Rarely, rarely do you see that level of immediate emotional response to the point of like convulsing, because not only what it meant, but the journey to get there, like, it was all right there, just naked for people to see. And it's another cool part of it because he's so honest about how difficult that was and how being so good at golf but not in those moments had been over a decade or more. Really, really cool stuff.
Yeah, it's cool.
It
was that Johnny Mack on the lens?
No, unfortunately, it's probably somebody from Getty. Like,
gotcha.
Shooting golf tournaments is impossible because it's as simple as, like, which way does the guy turn and face? So shoot, he faced away from me. I got his ass.
Right, right. All right. Barry, first time ever, I'm going to hit you with a pause, and we're going to get done here, sir. I appreciate you, man.
Sorry.
Thank you
that.
For making time for us, dude.
All right, man.
Thanks, guys. Appreciate it.
All right, man. Take care, brother.
That's our guy, Barry Sverluga. Give him a follow at Barry Sverluga, Sverluga. Columnist, Washington Post, absolutely brilliant writer, all around good dude. We come back, we got bets to make, and maybe a WNBA mock draft. Geno Smith says, I'm 34, I'll be 35 next year, I'll still feel 21. My body's feeling healthy, I'm ready to go.
Mm-hmm.
At what point do we need to recalibrate our, like, oh, that guy's old ratings?
I think we should have been did that some years ago, because guys have proven over 30 years old that they can still ball out at a high level in this league. You know, Tom played till 40-plus. I remember back in the day, Ray Brown was an offensive lineman, played till he was 40, 42. Big dude, Jackie Slater, played till 47 years old. Darryl Green was running 4.2 at 40 years old. You know what I mean?
What do you think Darryl could run a 40 in now?
Probably, he could probably still run 4.5.
You think that fast still?
4.5, 4.6. He's still trained. He still trains.
God.
He still trains speed stuff. So I believe he can run 4.5. Definitely low 4.6, if anything. But people... It's easy for people to say you're old when you hit 30. Hell, I had my best 3 years in a row after 30 years old. And I think the thing about it, people take care of themselves a lot better. There's so much, like I said before, the athletes today have the best equipment, all the best stuff to keep them healthy and get them ready for stuff. And still today, they complain more and they hurt more than the people that played when they didn't have all that great stuff. So what is it? I mean... They've changed it up. They don't work as hard. They don't have to practice as long or hard anymore. And today, you're supposed to be old at 30? We should move that age to 35, 36 in the sports world. But we won't. Hell, LeBron is what? About to be 40? Still shows up every night?
LeBron might be 40.
You know, and, but I'm saying he still shows up every night and is as good as the guys that are coming out of college now at 20, 19, 20, 21, and they still don't want to work.
LeBron UB40 James, 40 years old.
LeBron has put more on his body than most of these clowns that are coming out right now, and all they do is complain about how hard they got to work. He put way more tread on his tires, and he still could run up and down the court on them.
Play-in starts tomorrow.
Yeah.
Wizards not in the play-in, just so we're clear. We'll do an NBA playoffs preview tomorrow. I love the NBA playoffs. I don't know that I can really lock in until, like, the second round and on. But, dude, even the play-in game, kind of juicy. I'm probably not going to stay up for this, left hand up, be honest with you. But the West play-in game tomorrow night, Golden State versus Memphis, like I would enjoy that game, especially played at a playoff caliber, but it's tip-off's at 10 o'clock.
That's going to be it. I don't know about watching
it. Yeah, I don't think I'm making that. B, as he usually does, Landfill wrote a question here, and you and I were kind of debating this in the break. Who would you say is the most intimidating player in the NFL?
Depending on what you're looking at. If you're looking at power and things of that nature, I look at a guy like the dude in the middle in Philly, D tackle. I look at Chris Carter, Chris Jones. You talk about just outright nastiness. I look at a guy like a damn Jamar Chase. Outright speed, Tyreek Hill. Tyreek Hill lines up, and you know he's running the deep route. When they start going blue 28, you better start backpedaling because he's going to run past you. That's intimidating to people.
I mean, Saquon Barkley. Saquon in the backfield,
is intimidating.
Derrick Henry.
Yeah. If you got to go tackle him one-on-one, he's damn intimidating. And then you think about, what's that damn safety in, with the Chargers? Been around a while.
Yeah. Went to Florida
he
State.
He scares people.
Derwin James.
Yeah, he scares the hell out of people. He intimidates them. Because I see receivers going across the middle right now with Jeff Arms.
I think Minka intimidates some folks. That's funny, dude. I just got this highlight, and it's a lot of safeties just lighting dudes up. Kyle Hamilton will hit your ass. Who's the most intimidating dude on Washington? To me, I think it's Jaden.
Jaden, Terry.
I think folks are intimidated by Jaden Daniels.
If he has
the ball late in a close game, you better be intimidated.
If the ball goes up and number 17 is there, you better be intimidated. He's going to probably come down with it on your head.
I imagine Wagner is a fairly intimidating fella.
Yeah.
Why, Brian, who's the most
intimidating? Yeah, Dexter Lawrence.
Malik Nabers or Dexter Lawrence?
Malik Nabers is an intimidating dude.
Yeah. If you're the corner, that's tough. Trent Williams, pretty intimidating dude. Kittle's a pretty intimidating dude. Professor Landini, who's your answer? Most intimidating dude in the NFL?
Derwin James.
It is, safety is a, because receivers don't necessarily want to be hung out to dry and know they could just get blown up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that lends itself to perhaps the biggest collisions in those situations.
Mm-hmm. If you asked before the Super Bowl, Pat Mahomes was intimidating.
I'd say he still is.
I think he still is, too. When he gets offensive line, believe me, he's going to remember what happened.
Jalen Hurts might be pretty, I mean, the stuff that, Lamar?
Yeah. It's depending on what definition of intimidating that you're interpreting at that moment.
Jeffrey, what say you? Most intimidating player in the league?
I'm going to have to go with Myles Garrett.
Yeah. TJ Watt?
even just seeing that dude, like in person, even though he was pretty limited, Myles Garrett.
Yeah.
That's a big dude. And I ain't
when you watch. See him out of the uniform,
he's a big dude.
Just walk around in regular clothes, you go, damn, that dude put on a uniform. He look like a damn. Like, what's it called? Transformer?
Yeah, I was about to say Megatron.
Yeah.
That's a fun exercise. The answer is a lot of people. I want to make sure I point this out because I was impressed by this. Bub Carrington, rookie guard for the Wiz, played in all 82 games, led all rookies in minutes played this year. I like that, man.
See, that's what I'm saying. Like, there are guys from certain areas that their whole mindset and mantra is to work.
Yeah, man.
Bub from Baltimore, right?
Yes, sir.
We can say you crack jokes, say what you want. They got some workers up there. And that dude wants to play. And let's be real, there were games where they pulled him out because he was playing too good. He led rookies still. and I know people like to always say, oh, man, they always act like, oh, no. Young people, learn one thing. Don't expect to get if you don't work for it. Okay? Because people like Bub, he got talent. But he works his ass off. And he will get respect from people from whatever generation. A lot of them don't get that respect because they're always looking for the easy way out.
When we come back, we're going to make some bets. If you are watching us on the stream as we wrap up the show, everybody say hello to our friend, Mr. John Leahy.
Leahy!
John popped in, recording some stuff, so hanging out with us for the end of the program here. That's the legend, John Leahy. We talk about him all the time. Yep. All right, B, before we make some bets, are you ready for this?
What you got?
I got a WNBA mock draft for you, baby.
So who's going third?
So the Mystics have the third, the fourth, and the sixth pick tonight. So Paige Bueckers is, like, supposed to be the truth,
yeah,
right?
Yeah.
Offer 3, 4, and 6 for her. Move up to 1.
You need to have a team, though, Jay.
They had a team. They got Aaliyah Edwards.
I think if you get 3, 4, I'll take a 3, 4, and a 6. If I can get 6, 3 of the top 7 players in the draft, I'll take that over just the 1.
So I did the all-cast yesterday, and I got to talk to Christy Winter Scott, who's just a lovely person.
Mm-hmm.
And she was telling me, so according to the website, I don't know why this doesn't make a lick of sense. I have landed on a WNBA mock draft courtesy of ProFootballNetwork.com. If that just ain't a content clicks play, I don't know what it is.
You ain't lying about that. Hey, look, we follow other sports.
No, they're just trying to find people Googling WNBA draft. All right, they got Bueckers going 1 to Dallas. Anisha Morrow of LSU going to Seattle. 3, okay. Here you go, B. For the Mystics, Kiki from USC. Irafin?
I like her.
Yeah. She was good.
That's when it came from USC. She came in after Juju went out and went to work, dog.
Yeah, dude.
Yeah.
Then they have number 4, Sonia Citron from Notre Dame.
Citron.
And then at 6, Cheyenne Sellers from Maryland. It'd be great if a Terp got drafted to the 6. But here's the person I'm most intrigued by, B. Christy Winter Scott was telling me about this woman, Dominique Malonga. Malongo.
From where?
She's from France. She is basically the female Wembanyama.
How tall is she?
Christy told me she's 6'6".
Okay.
And could dunk.
Wow.
Like, I want that person.
Yeah.
Her nickname is Victoria Wembanyama. You know, she's only 19 and she's 6'6".
Damn.
Like, she could grow still.
Is she
going to
grow a little more?
Right? I mean, can grow to your 21, 22.
Right.
All right, I got a highlight of her.
Did she dunk?
Yo, she can, like, legit dunk. Look. Oh, yeah. That's like a little spin move.
Yeah.
All right, I'm in on Victoria Wembanyama. Dominique Malonga is who I hope they pick tonight. Let's make some bets.
All right. Gather around.
Johnny, you got a bet you want to make? You let us know. We have Leahy wants Malonga. we've reached a tough stretch, man. We're gonna get to that part of the world where all we have left to bet is baseball.
Hey, you can find a way.
Give me the Yankees and the Pirates in the parlay.
You're a hater taking the Pirates.
You're a straight hater. Bro, that's going to be tough. Skeens playing at Pittsburgh and the Nationals going in there while they at home.
Crew's going to take him yard tonight.
He might.
You won't bet that.
I'm betting this stuff right here. Wouldn't put no money on it.
I am excited to watch Skeens tonight. I'm going over 6.5 strikeouts for Paul Skeens.
Wow.
So you're a hater, seven. Too.
I'm not
Jade
a hater.
All forever, hating always.
I'm not a hater. He's the Jade best pitcher forever, in
hating,
baseball.
Hating.
Whatever, I'm in.
Uh-huh.
Write it down, White Brian.
Give me the Warriors, -6.5.
That's tomorrow.
That is tomorrow.
Give me.
You should have let him take it. You should have let him take it.
You should have let me take it. All right, give me the Orlando Magic.
That's also tomorrow.
All right.
Hey, yo. Nah, he can't bet no more.
Oh, boy.
You're going to have to bet on baseball or hockey tonight, dude.
I don't want to bet on either one of them.
I'm taking the Tigers.
All right, give me the Phillies.
Did Landy take something? Malanga?
L.A. Kings.
L.A. Kings for Landfill. All right, that's it. Everything's in the books. Malanga. We want Victoria Wembanyama.
V-dub.
Tomorrow we will have a WNBA draft recap.
Cool. Book it.
Thank you to Steve Sands for joining us. Thank you to Mark Zuckerman for joining us. Thank you to Steve Wino for joining us. And thank you to Barry Sverluga for joining us. Congratulations to Rory McIlroy. Grant and Danny coming your way next. I promise they'll have significantly less golf talk than we did. We're back tomorrow.
More baseball talk.
Way more baseball. We're back tomorrow. Going to be fun. Made it as far, Elie Beer.